Thank you for tuning in to Hacks and Hobbies with your host, Junaid. We're visited by our amazing guests coming from all walks of life. We want to learn their story, their struggles, and their journey on how they got to where they are today. So stick around.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Hacks and Hobbies. In our last conversation, Michael Haskell walked us through the fundamentals of raising capital. If you missed it, go back and listen. You'll get clarity on what investors really look for and how to avoid costly mistakes. Today, we're going deeper. What happens after you raise the money? How do you scale smart, lead your team, and make sure that funding actually creates growth instead of chaos? Michael, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Janae. Good to see you.
Good to see you, man. Michael, so many businesses raise money and then overspend or scale too fast. What's the right way to think about growth after raising capital?
Right. Okay. So many do, right? And they can actually run themselves right off the tracks. Mm-hmm. Just because you got a bunch of money in the bank doesn't mean you should stop thinking like you're bootstrapping. Right. So, yes, you've got some extra cash for growth initiatives, but you don't want to go about it where you're running around trying to hire everybody you can find, thinking that you're going to scale so fast. You need everybody with a pulse to be on payroll, so to speak.
Exactly.
And I think what happens for a lot of companies, I've seen this and experienced this myself, is that you're really, really, really conservative and hire really slowly when you're watching every penny. But when you get a bunch of cash, you're less stringent oftentimes in the quality of the personnel you're bringing to your business. And you can usually get away with that for a little while, but over time, you get some rot on the vine.
Yeah, you got to make sure that the money that you raise, you're also getting money back, even though you're spending that money that you raise. You want to make sure that the systems that are in place, that you are making that cash back through advertising or revenue generating activities. So talk to me, how do you balance cost control with pressure to grow at all costs?
Right. Yeah. Very carefully. And careful. As we mentioned earlier, if you do take on VC investment, right, you're going to receive a ton of pressure to grow at all costs. Mm. They almost sometimes forget that if, you run out of cash, then everybody's, the music stops and no one's got a chair.
Yes.
Because they put so much pressure on you to grow at numbers that would allow them to 100x their investment.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be stressful for the leadership team.
Yeah.
Because, booking double digit, even small triple digit growth can be hard. But then when you've got somebody, over your shoulder really kind of pushing you for it, it makes it even tougher. How to balance that, I guess. So the first thing would be look at who you allow to get involved and invest. Mm-hmm. Because some people are gonna push you harder and cause you more sleepless nights than other investors. They're not all the same. But trying to figure out ways that you can balance the revenue generation, right, and the fulfillment, right? So, and a lot of companies, it tends to be what the founding team's bias might be, right?
Sure.
So if you're a sales first organization, right, oftentimes you hire a bunch of really great salespeople and they go out and they sell a bunch of stuff, and problem is you can't deliver it to them, right? So you fall down there, right? If you're really tech heavy in your founding team, right, you realize how cool your tech is. You hire a bunch of, technologists that are on their A game, and you've got the coolest stuff imaginable, but nobody's buying it, right?
Yeah.
The key is, like, even though you've got that war chest, which is an enviable position to be in, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of small to medium-sized business owners would wish to be you, but just because you've got this war chest, you do need to be very fiscally prudent with how you deploy that cash. And I would say, put in hard, tangible metrics that are data driven that tell you when a certain facet of your business is ready for additional personnel or additional investment. Even some of the best entrepreneurs, if you just trust your gut all the time, you know, we can make mistakes, right? So you want to make those decisions as data driven as you possibly can.
I love that you said, you know, you want to make those decisions as data driven as possible, because you mentioned earlier, you know, putting those metrics in place so you can track, hey, where's the money going? Where's the money coming in from? Where do we need to spend and where do we need to pull back? And, you know, balancing the whole ship so that you're continue to moving forward. And that's the thing, you know, also mentioned about leadership. Now, scaling is one side of the coin, but the other side is leadership. So let's explore that. How can we, or, you know, you've managed and advised leaders across multiple continents. What do great leaders consistently do well in times of growth?
Well, okay. So continuing to keep the bar high for performance and expectations, right? So I'll give you an example. It's not unreasonable for an organization when they're bootstrapped to be converting, say, 10 to 15% of their leads, right? Because leads are like gold, right? You mine these leads as hard as you possibly can. You've got your sales folks that are revisiting these leads on two, three, or four different instances, and you are getting every lead over the line you possibly can. All right, you go out, you raise $5 million. All of a sudden, your lead generation systems are pumping out, you're paying for it, of course, right? But you're pumping out more leads than you ever thought imaginable before. Okay, now your conversion rates aren't 10 to 15%, they're 4. Wow. Right? Now your top line numbers are still growing because you've got 6 times or 8 times more leads than you had before.
Sure.
But your conversion rates drop from 12 to 4. And that's because the folks that are watching the sales team, for example, in this instance, haven't continued to keep the bar ultra high. Wow, right. Yeah, so it's like when you scale, being awash with money sometimes can, you don't get lazy. That's not right. But I guess some of the urgency is a better term. Sometimes you lose some of the urgency. So you want your leaders to be able to keep urgency, right? You want the culture to be fun and happy, but urgency needs to stay there. You don't want folks getting lackadaisical, and just because we're buying so much revenue, our top line numbers aren't hurting, but our gross profit margins are hurting, our net profit margins are hurting, you know, because no one's really hitting it as hard as they were back when we were bootstrapped, right? That sort of thing happens more often than most people probably would think. So, you know, trying to keep that sense of urgency with them.
The sense of urgency is so powerful, and you're absolutely right. You know, when I am getting the kids to school, there's a sense of an urgency, right? We have this much time, amount of time to get you to school on time so that you can start your day, I can start my day. And that same thing, you know, it remains throughout the school year because we have that solid dates in place or solid times in place. So keeping that same level of urgency in the company, even though you've got a ton of money, how do you keep that sense of urgency to keep that conversion rate even higher? Maybe go even higher. You know, instead of going from 14 or 12 to 3, try getting it from 14 to 20. You know, what systems can you put in place? Because now you have the money, pull back on leads and push down on, okay, what can we do to make the quality of that conversion even better?
100%.
Michael, what advice would you give to a first-time founder suddenly managing a team of 50 after being used to a team of 5?
Oh, wow. Okay, so do the best. If they've brought on some external shareholders, right, and hopefully if they've expanded that quickly, they have, try to be very selective in the shareholders that you're bringing on board. Try to find some folks that have been there before. Because going from a team of 5 to a team of 50 after some external investment is a massive change. Probably can't overstate how massive of a change it is. Yeah. So try to get yourself at least a couple of people around you that are on your share register or that are mentors that have been in those shoes before, because you're going to come up against challenges on a regular basis, probably on a daily basis, that you haven't seen before, because the scale of the human beings, the scale of the project, everything's changed. The amount of money you're sitting on, your war chest, all that's changed. You're in brand new debts for the first time on a number of different fronts. So try to get the right people around you to help. And again, try to get the right investors, right? Because if you get the right investors, they'll help you navigate those spaces too.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Getting the right people in place is absolutely the number one thing that we should all be thinking about. And having them being able to see the vision, because they're investing in the vision and in you, and then their ability to say, hey, how can we help and how can we come in to provide you even more assistance, maybe connect you with some other people that have helped, you know, as they're going in companies and investing. For example, I was listening or watching this video around Kevin O'Leary, and he's talking about every single day he woke up in the morning and somebody's like, oh my God, this fire's out. And then another, like an hour later, he gets a call where an investment that he has made is going out 50x on the sale.
Right.
And it's like, okay, you're going to have good news and you're going to have bad news throughout the day. It all comes down to how resilient and how patient you can be through that those ebb and flow.
Yeah, I would agree wholeheartedly, right? The ebbs and the flows, massive. And the resilience and the patience, you learn to take them kind of in your stride with the experience.
Yes.
Right. So first time founders that are just seeing that for the first time, their stress levels are going to be through the roof because, you know, they're firmly out of their comfort zone. Whereas once you've seen that 3, 4, 5, 8, 15, 35 times, it gets a little bit easier to kind of manage those substantial swings.
I love that. Now, Michael, leadership is what keeps a business alive. But let's also get practical. What are the three plays every leader should run to scale without losing sanity?
Okay, so what a leader should want to do to scale, just to make sure I understand.
Yeah.
What they should do, okay.
Losing sanity,
Okay, without losing sight or without losing sanity?
Sanity.
Okay, all right. So looking after yourself is a big one. Proper sleep, proper nutrition are very important things. Actually, I've been an entrepreneur since I was 25 or so, and I overlooked that big time at that age. You get a little closer to 40 and you start thinking, oh, there was something about that. You know, I really should have been looking after my health and wellness more when I was a younger man. Definitely, if you want to keep your mental edge and you don't want to burn out and you don't want to be overwhelmed, you do have to be intentional about looking after yourself, right? You've got to get enough rest. You've got to get enough recharge time, and you've got to get enough, healthy quality nutrients in your body. So that's a big one. The other massive one, and especially in today's world, I feel like each year, probably every month, this is more important, but you've got to be a continual learner, right? You've got to be wanting to get out there. And I think a lot of the younger business owners, they know that cold, right? They kind of grew up in that, if I'm not learning every day, I'm falling behind mentality.
Yes. Yeah.
Some of your, maybe some of your, over 50, 55 crowd that once they learned their expert know-how, they didn't have to stay as on top of it because they were too busy applying it, right?
Yeah.
With that older generation, maybe don't do it as well, but it's imperative to continue to stay sharp and to stay learning. So look after yourself, stay sharp, continual learning. And then I think do what you need to do psychologically to maintain a positive outlook. Right. Especially as a younger entrepreneur or founder, because as we talked about in the last segment, you are going to have things that try your patience and you're going to have things that make you doubt your resilience.
Oh, yeah.
And if you can't keep telling yourself in the early days, it's a lot of self-talk in the early days we'll get through this. This will be fine. This is a problem that we need to address. This is the best way to do that. Let's act. Even if it's not perfect, let's see what we can do to surmount that challenge. but let's maintain a positive outlook and belief that we're going to get over that hurdle. I think those would be the three biggest ones. So look after your body, keep a positive outlook, and never stop learning.
Man, I love that, because I'm a huge proponent of keeping healthy, putting in good food in our bodies, because it's the only one we got. It's the only body we have. This is immediately affecting the business that you're running, the business that you've put in place. When I got introduced to Tony Robbins, he pushed personal power. You know, this is like 20 plus years ago. And it's like, it's all about personal power, because who's the person behind your business? It's the person. It's not it's not a physical object. It's a person, in the entire business lives inside a person's mind, and you create it as an intellectual property. So I absolutely love that. Keeping sure that this body is solid and your mind is sharp and you're continually learning. I mean, those are absolutely amazing plays for leadership, for leaders to keep that going. Now, if someone's listening only remembers one lesson about leading after raising capital, what should it be?
All right. One lesson for say the chief executive after raising capital. Okay. Do not chase too many growth initiatives all at once. Because, you know, the first time somebody drops, you know, $3, $4, $5 million on you, you think you've got more money than, you know, King Solomon.
Sure.
But, you know, it might surprise you how quickly that money can evaporate.
Oh, yeah.
If you go down too many pathways at once, or if you make a bad acquisition. Or, you know, don't lose that kind of single-minded focus on executing on what you know to be your business, right? This is what we do well, right? Continue to execute on that and scale that as best as you possibly can without getting sidetracked into, oh, this would be really cool if we went and did that. And it might be, right? It might be really cool.
It might be, yeah.
And it might also be a good way to take 20% of your war chest and light it on fire. And then once you have that problem, then that starts to demoralize senior leadership.
Yes.
Right? They're no longer as confident. Now they're more tentative.
Yeah.
And then, of course, that has a knock on downstream across the culture. Right. Mm-hmm. So stay focused, stick to your knitting, do what you do well.
I love that, Michael. Thank you so much. You know, it's so important to follow through with that first revenue generating activity. Get it as tight as possible, as efficient as possible before you go into the next one, because that action alone is going to fund the next one instead of you using the capital that you raised. You know, that capital is just to get you to the next step, but you want to make sure that you're continuing to make additional money as you go back.
100% and deep and narrow. And I think that also comes to where you choose to have your revenue generating activities, right? You know, if you're on the East Coast of Australia or you're in California and you've penetrated 20% of that local market, now is not the time to go to London.
Right.
Right. You've penetrated 20% of your local market.
Yeah.
Batten down the hatches, get that to 40 or 50 or 60% of your local market.
Yeah.
And then start thinking about going to another country.
I love that you mentioned, you know, the 20% of the market you got locked down. Now you're going to go different country. No. That 20% market is a better view, or is a better indication that now that you know 20% of people, guess what? They know more people that can be your testimonials. That could be your referral people, right?
100%. And you traditionally get margin expansion when you go deep and narrow as well, right?
Yeah.
You know, when you go from 20% of the Californian market to 25% of the Californian market, that next 5% is going to be very attractive revenue.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That first 5% in the UK is not going to be attractive. You're going to burn cash trying to get that first 5%, right?
Yes.
So go deep and narrow, capture as much as you can before you get the big, you know, thinking we're going to go conquer the world eyes. Do that, right? Let's do that, but let's not do that until it's time to do that.
Exactly. Michael, thank you so much. This has been so much fun. Now, you've lived and worked across the world. if you could pick one place to go back and lead a business from again, where would it be?
Okay, so that's a challenge. I like doing business in New Zealand, right? Mm-hmm. So New Zealand mm-hmm. has a very simple tax code.
Mm-hmm.
Employee law is pretty straightforward. There is no capital gains tax in New Zealand, for example. That's what makes it far more attractive yeah. of a place to domicile the business in, say, Australia. But it's so far away from everywhere. Yeah. Right. So if I were going to do full-time roll up my sleeves to another 8 to 10 year project where I was the founding team chief executive, I'd probably pick Singapore.
Nice. And the cool part about Singapore is their main language is also English, if I'm not wrong.
It is.
Yeah.
But and also easy to understand, business climate, mm-hmm. compliance is relatively straightforward.
Yeah.
Tax codes are very advantageous. Mm. Company tax is waived for the first couple of years, 17.5 from year three on. Income tax for your people that are working there, low.
Yeah.
Wow. Connectivity. I mean, you're basically most major cities on the planet, you're one flight from Singapore. Time zones work reasonably well. Their banking nice. System's strong. A lot of positives for them. And even with all of that,
yeah.
Their cost of their labor, their labor market is not too much.
Nice.
Right? I mean, it's still reasonable.
I love it. Well, Michael, thank you so much again for coming on. Where can people find you and learn more about Navitas Consulting?
So either the Navitas website or just hop onto my LinkedIn account.
Perfect. Michael, we'll be sure to include the links to Navitas Consulting and your LinkedIn in the show notes so folks can get to you. Thank you so much for your time. This has been absolutely mind-opening, and I've learned a ton. Here's to more investing victories to Navitas Consulting.
Yes, thank you, Janae. It's been an enjoyable conversation as well.
Absolutely. We'll see you in the next one. Guys, there you have it. Raising capital is step one, but scaling with clarity and leading with intention is what separates lasting companies from the ones that burn out. This is Junaid, your host. Until next time, keep learning, keep building, and keep hacking your passions. We'll see you in the next episode.
Thank you for listening to this Hacks and Hobbies episode. Junaid would love to hear from you, so please leave a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts. Visit hacksandhobbies.com to find additional information on the guest today, as well as the show notes.